started.
I saw a question.
Focus over, land over, whichever one we're at. Okay, so we're going to talk about basically Pesach Chametz, the symbolism of it, because really the whole deal with like Chametz on Pesach is actually like totally anomalous and totally like shocking and doesn't seem to make any sense. Why? Sure. At first glance, right? The fact that we can't have Chametz on Pesach, you're like, what do you mean? Of course it makes all the sense in the world. The Torah tells us exactly why, right?
Can I have a source sheet?
Yeah. Which is what, like, and it's actually this I didn't put on the story sheet, but the psukim tell us exactly what the deal is with, like, the whole chametz matzah thing, right? Why do we, right, what's the deal with chametz matzah on Pesach? Why is that one of the things that we do on Pesach? The psukim tell us straight out. What's the deal? Again, it's not a trick question. You know it since first grade. Like, why do we have matzah on Pesach?
Because we didn't have time
for the Midrash. Exactly! There was no time for the dough to rise. That's not just the Midrash, right? The psukim explicitly say it. We have it on its different setup.
Every time someone asks me that now, I say, Lachem Onin, Lachem Shonin Olav Zubin.
I think the worst part was when he points to his mouth and I go, Gossage!
What?
No, that's the first thing I thought of when he pointed to his face.
I'm like, don't you have
you can't even see his thing.
Does he have a mustache?
Yeah.
He has a beard.
I feel like I don't notice that.
Okay. Anyway, but that's you, whatever. Is basically the psukim say straight out, right, that lo tochal lav chametz shiv atim nim tochal lav matzot lechem oni ki v'chipazon yatzat v'eretz Yisrael. Right, you left in such a rush, and in fact, in Shmuel Perek Yud-Bet, it goes even further, and it says, right, matecha zach mitzrayim al ha'am lemeher l'shalcham min ha'aretz ki amru kulanu meitim, right, the mitzrayim were like pressuring us, you gotta run out. Because they were afraid they're all going to die. Vayisa ha'am et b'teko terem yechmat, right, so they had to grab their dough before it, right, turned into chametz. Basically, right, they have to, like, wrap the leftovers, throw it over their shoulder, right, and rush out. And it even says, totally explicitly in Lamed Tet, right, they made it to mato, not chametz, ki gershuvim mishayim, l'yukhulit mameh, right, they couldn't delay, whatever. And so, and that's it, right, we all know that since, you know, probably even before first grade, right, that there wasn't time for the dough to rise. The reason, though, that even though the psukim explicitly tell us all that, and therefore we understand why we're eating matzah, right, to remember how they ran out of Egypt, what suddenly we realize is that this doesn't actually really explain why we can't have chametz. Why? Because in theory, if what we're just trying to remember is how they were, like, rushed out of Egypt and they didn't have time for the dough to rise, so they had to eat matzah, we could, in theory, just add matzah to the menu. Exactly. Like, why can't we eat chametz and matzah?
Also,
right?
Technically, matzah is chametz.
No.
It's not chametz. It's made of the same ingredients, but it's not chametz.
It's made out of wheat.
Right, meaning it's made out of wheat, but it's not chametz. Meaning part of what makes it chametz
is
wheat,
right? Peppers.
That's infinitely more funny.
Whatever, you know what I mean.
Yeah, we know you.
So many heroes got my back. I don't need any of you.
I'm so sorry. Are we
recording this, by the way?
I'm sorry. For better or for worse. What if Jackie's recording this?
Okay, and Jackie's
recording this. Ellen, we know are not the same.
Some of them.
Okay,
it is, though. It's wheat.
Okay, we're going to continue on.
It's the one wheat product you're allowed to eat on Pesach. Is that accurate?
False. Not false.
Well, it depends. If you eat matzah meal and gebraks and whatever, then you can't make other things. But it's just it starts to
what is gebraks?
It's wet.
Okay.
You just forgot about it. You don't eat wet matzah.
You can't put cream cheese on matzah.
Oh my god.
You can't make matzah pizza. You can't make matzah bar. Oh, I love matzah.
I love matzah cream cheese.
I know matzah
cream
cheese is such a simple
thing. It's so good every breakfast.
It's so good.
It's so good.
But I don't eat anymore because then we go
to the okay, guys, come. We are continuing. Ready? Okay, here we go. Point being, question number one is that, again, so we understand why we have to eat matzah, but it doesn't really explain why we can't just, like, eat also chametz, have regular chametz and just add matzah. That's number one. Number two, to carry it even further for 1 second, think about sukkahs, right? On sukkahs, what do? We go and sit in the sukkah. What would be the parallel if we were going to treat sukkahs the way that we treat...
You can't live in your own house.
Exactly. It would mean that we would say, you have to live
Let's all go live in the desert.
Remember the way that we were protected by God in the desert, and it would be usur to enter your house. But we don't do that, so then how can we do that here? Do you see, just so when you think about the parallels, you realize that we don't do this by other things. You live in a sukkah, and you can still go in your house. Like, so why don't we do that here by Pesach?
Can I make Is there also a connection to why Pesach is mentioned, like in Melachim Bet, like why Yoshiyahu like does a whole Pesach thing again? Like, why is that the holiday that like we seem a lot more strict on than every other?
Ah, interesting. So I wasn't even gonna, but you'll see. I actually think that what we are going to develop will help explain that. So keep that in mind. I think we will answer that. Okay, second question, but again, all sort of related to just trying to understand the symbolism of, like, having to get rid of chametz, is also the fact that we're about to, like, start this, like, all-out war, right, against chametz over these next 2 weeks is also totally unique among the holidays, right, because not only are we not allowed to eat chametz, if that, which already we're saying we don't really eat, we'll have to understand why can't we eat chametz instead of just adding matzah to the menu. However, what makes us go so crazy in preparation before Pesach is the fact that the prohibition is not merely not to eat it. What's the prohibition? Exactly, right? You're not even allowed to own it, or you're not supposed to even see it. That's what makes us go so crazy. If it were simply that you can't eat it, okay, fine. So, like, we'll just, I don't know, lock it behind some cabinet or whatever it is. What makes us go so crazy is the fact you can't even own it, right? There's this additional level of bayirah balyimatze, and that's really what is sort of going to, like, obsess us over these next 2 weeks. So again, why? We do not really see that by other things. What's maybe the one other, like, place where we see that you can't even own something? Otherwise, fine. You can own it. Just don't eat it or don't, whatever it is. Very good, by a Avodah Zarah. Right? You're not allowed to own a Avodah Zarah, even if you don't worship it, right? But by other things, like even like a pig or whatever it is, you can own it, just don't, you know, whatever, don't eat it. Now again, there is an Isra Hana'ah against getting benefit if you cook meat and milk together, but again, that's only if you get benefit. If you owned it for some reason, didn't do anything with it. Like,
yeah, like, you're allowed to buy it for, like, your babysitter.
Although, again, so basar b'chalav, actually, you can't, because you're not...
Oh, but you can buy just, like, a
burger. If you
just
owned it for some... There's no inherent prohibition against the ownership of it. Again, by Avodah Zarah, yes, and here. But again, it begs this question about why. Like, why do we go so crazy about chametz that you can't even own it? And then the last piece, just to develop even all the questions, is that what's kind of also complicated about chametz is that on the one hand, it would seem to represent something like totally like horrible and evil and whatever it is, and that's why we're going so crazy. We're saying you can't, you know, own it and you can't see it and you can't, you know, eat it, even though whatever really you think, just add matzah and whatever it is. It seems to represent something awful. But if that were the case, then I would almost think, why doesn't the Torah just say then that you can't eat matzah, eat chametz all year round, right? It's not like the Torah is a stranger to the idea of saying there are some things that are just off limits always, right? Like basar b'chalav, like pig, like whatever it is, right? Exactly. So on the one hand, it would be like insane for our lives, but you know what? There's lots of other things that if we weren't used to it, we would also think that was insane, but because we're used to it, so like in theory,
everything.
We were just like used to it, okay, we would just, whatever, you know, have our own, you know, whatever, alternative menus and whatever. Anyway, but point being, we have to also try to make sense of the fact that on the one hand, it seems to represent something totally awful, that it has all these extremes, you can't even own it or see it or whatever it is. On the other hand, it's actually totally fine, you know, 90% of the year. It's only for this 1 week that you can't have it, except from one place. Where's the one place all year round that you can't have chametz at all? Good. In the Beit HaMikdash, and where in particular? Exactly, on the Mizbeach. Okay, so we have to, again, in trying to sort of develop a larger sort of concept of what's the deal with chametz, we need to try to make sense of all that. Like, even the fact that the rest of the year you can have it, except for on the Mizbeach. There's something about, like, the Mizbeach that you can't have chametz through all year long, but, like, so what's going on? Okay, so to try to understand all this, we have to first, like, take a detour and understand more about the Korban Pesach, which seems totally unrelated, but we will see how, in fact, it will connect. Which is, so I'm glad that Sarah's here, right, because you guys did Korban Pesach for your thing, remember, and I said I was going to talk about that.
What's barbecue to God. Slaughter.
What's it called? In any case, so they did that for their Pesach project in our year. Okay, so first let's try to understand the significance of the Korban Pesach. Okay, so at first glance, right? It just seems like, I don't know, Judaism is, like, rife with, like, karbanot. In fact, we happen to be in the middle of Sefer Vayikra, which is, like, tons and tons and tons of karbanot, right? And let's face it, especially as Jews living, right, in a post-Beit HaMikdash era, they kind of all just often mush together in our minds, right? There's, like, olas and shlamims and todas and, like, all these different things, but whatever, they don't have so much significance to us, you know, unfortunately. Please God, the Beit HaMikdash will be rebuilt and we'll appreciate it more. The Karban Pesach, though, even among all these karbanot, is totally, totally unique. In fact, right, could be for those of you who are in Rav Liebtag's class, he has like a whole article about this. One of the things which is so unique about it is it even generates a holiday of its own. Yeah, like have you guys done this with him? Yes, exactly.
What?
Right? Just to see it for those who are not in his class, because it's super important.
It's like a Pesach.
Yes. So important to know this. So again, so I'll do it briefly since I'm glad that some of you know it, but it's so important to know this. It's like my dear. I don't think I did it in my class.
Yeah.
Really?
You might just know it. Like, I just know that.
I don't know it.
Yeah, I think we did.
Sometimes you just didn't know.
Sometimes you just know everything.
I know in a woman who
I'm sorry. Did that come up in
women in Halal? Are you? Yeah,
oh, my God. Oh, my God.
It didn't come up in women in Halal.
Did it come up in Rav Yoni's class?
No. It's Rav Yoni's class. Oh. Then why'd you ask me? I thought you were talking about Rav Yoni's class. Anyway, well, either way, I will say it now for Chazar, for those who know it, and for New, for those who don't, because it is super important to know, is that there are really two totally different holidays in Nisan, okay? We always, I know especially growing up, I was always taught, right, there's like four different names for Pesach, and one is Pesach, and one is Chag HaMatzot, and one is Chag Aviv, and one is Reitzman, Potato. However, if you take a look at the shape shot of the psukim, what's actually so cool is that it actually shows that Pesach and Chag HaMatzot are not two different names for the same holiday. It's actually two different holidays. Look at the second source that I brought on the sheet from Vayikra Perek Chaf Gimel, where it says, right, Elam Odei Hashem Mikrei Kodesh Asher Tikutam Motam, right? These are the holidays of God. So clearly we are in the section about the holidays of God. Pasuk Hey says, "V'chodesh harishon be'arba'a asar l'chodesh." Now, what's arba'a asar l'chodesh harishon? Is the 14th of Nisan, what you and I call erev Pesach? But look what the pasuk is about to call it, right? Be'in arba'in Pesach l'Hashem. Yud Dalet Nisan, according to the Torah, is Pesach. If you look at the next pasuk in pasuk Vav, "Ubachamisha asar yom l'chodesh hazeh," on the 15th, which is what you and I call the beginning of Pesach. Really, in the Torah, they're two totally different things. Yudalid Nisan, what you and I call Erev Pesach, is actually Pesach. What you and I call Pesach is actually Chag HaMatzot. Okay, they're two different names because they're actually two different holidays. Point being, what then is the holiday, so to speak, of Pesach that's on Yudalid Nisan? It's the holiday that is generated by the Korban Pesach. Meaning, we need to, like, not be fooled. And even though, again, we're living in this, like, post-Beit HaMikdash, post-Karban era, we need to appreciate the Karban Pesach is not just one of those, like, mushah of Karban. No, the Karban Pesach is literally, like, a universe unto itself. It is so critical, such that it even, like, generates a whole holiday of its own. Now, first, we have to prove that. First of all, we see it already in the Psukim that it calls it, like, Pesach, and it's under the header of Elam Odei Hashem. But in order to ever prove that something is a holiday, what do we always look for? What's always, like, classic litmus test of, like, whether something is a holiday in Halacha? Excellent, right? In Isser Malacha. Excellent, right? So the question is, right, does Erev Pesach? Yes. So Erev Pesach happens to have an Isser Malacha. If you take a look at the third source, right, the Rambam, he explicitly says, right, they're talking about, whatever, basically, we'll just start from the beginning, Asur Lasso Malacha Barve Yom Tov and Minam Halva. Basically, in general, we should try not to do Malacha on Erev Yom Tov. But he says on the second line, Aval in Makino to Makat Mardu, but like if you do Malacha on Erev Yom Tov, whatever, you don't get lashes. Vein Tabiachlamar Shaman Adino Tone, it goes without saying that, of course, we wouldn't excommunicate somebody who did Malacha on Erev Yom Tov, except, before you get too happy about it, look at the underlying part, Chutz Me Erev Pesach Achar Chatzot, except for Erev Pesach afternoon, and we'll talk about why Chatzot is so significant. Somebody who does Malacha on Erev Pesach after Chatzot, we would excommunicate him. It goes without saying that we would give lashes to somebody who did Malacha on Erev Pesach, right, if we didn't excommunicate him. Because the 14th of Nisan is not like any other Erev Yom Tov. Right? Why is it so? The Karban Pesach generates a holiday of its own within Isser Malacha. And in fact, why then? This is very unusual that the Isser Malacha starts at Chatzot. Usually, when does every whatever Isser start, if there's an Isser Malacha? With sundown, the night before. Why does it start with Chatzot? Exactly, because Chatzot is the earliest time possible to bring the Korban Pesach. It's so clear that the Korban Pesach is generating a holiday of its own within Nisar Malacha, and therefore it's going to have all these unique rules, because it's going to start from the earliest time of bringing the Korban Pesach, which is at Chatzot. And therefore, again, we really see that it even has, again, has in Nisar Malacha. And actually, it's continued on in source number 4 in the Shulchan Aruch. It also talks about that point being there really is a notion of an Nisar Malacha on Erev Pesach.
Over.
Me, I know. So the question is, what about? It seems perhaps that it's more the type of Isra Malacha that reminds me of what we saw in Masechah Megillah about Purim, meaning where you shouldn't be doing Malacha that isn't necessary for the Chag. So, and at least most of the Malacha that we are doing on Erev Pesach usually is like Chag.
I feel like Erev Pesach really, like, I feel like I like, wait, are we talking about like the night before, like you're still, you can eat chametz?
So Erev Pesach, you already, that is actually my next thing. Excellent. Hold on, wait, I'm going to come to that right now.
Okay.
Which is, what is the second proof that shows that Erev Pesach itself is a holiday? Because while not only does it have an Isra Malacha, but what else is true in Erev Pesach? There's already an Isra Chametz,
right?
And here's what's so interesting. I know I had always just kind of assumed, oh, it's probably all just drama.
So it's like that 10 a.m. part. That's what
yes,
we're talking
about. I was about
to
say that. Now here's what's so cool. You were exactly right that usually it's around 10, 10:15, 10:30 that you have to stop eating chametz. That piece is drabanan, but on a d'oraita level, when you have to, on a d'oraita level, stop eating chametz already, at chatzot, on Erev Pesach. Point being, the earliest time possible for eating the Korban Pesach, or for slaughtering the Korban Pesach, is already when an Isra Malacha kicks in, is already when a d'oraita Isra chametz kicks in. Point being, clearly it really is a holiday of its own that is already creating all these things. And the last piece also is that in what we also even see is that mourners, right? Somebody who is, God forbid, right, sitting Shiva on, say, an Erev Yom Tov. Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, normally, right, you would stop. It only says, like, Samuch L'Chashecha, right? Basically, when it gets close to dark.
Yeah, it's earlier.
Yes, exactly.
So
but on Erev Pesach,
they stop
earlier because Erev Pesach itself is a holiday.
Wait, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So every, like, morning before Pesach, like, either me and my sisters or whatever, we'll, like, go somewhere and get breakfast and get, like, chametz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because it's
that.
Like, yeah. But then we, like, drive back. Like, it starts and we drive back. Like, I don't know, like, the rest of the day, I don't know what I'm doing. I think, like, I'm probably on my phone. Like,
wait, this is actually an excellent question. Anybody here going to be in Israel? If so, you are really very cordially invited to join me. I hope I'll be able to pull it off. It had actually, because of this year, when I first learned this material, had really wanted for a long time to, like, spend, really, I agree with you. I mean, fine, I usually spend it, not, like, say, just. So, really, it should be only Malacha, like, geared towards preparation for the Chag. But usually I'm like running around like a, you know, chicken without a head trying to get ready for Pesach. But I'd really always like wanted to spend Erev Pesach. Really, that's not how Erev Pesach is supposed to be spent. It's supposed to be at the Beit HaMikdash, bringing our Korban Pesach. It itself is a holiday because of the Korban Pesach. So I'd really always wanted to spend Erev Pesach to go to the Kotel and like read something or learn about. Wait, we have to hear this. Actually really made me so happy.
Oh, I wish I could
picture that. Wait, don't come if you're here.
I'm not here.
From tomorrow, from
me. My flight is
last year, it gets actually crazier. So last year, I finally actually had this, my sister was hosting Seder the year before I did, so then it was obviously busier. And I was like, actually like ready. I was like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go to the Kotel, whatever. And it was crazy. Tamar Janice, do you guys know her? She was a student here last year. She came during like January break. She went to Berman. Anyway, she happened to call me just to like wish me like a Chag Sameach, and I was like, wait, I'm about to go to the Kotel, come join me. And we met at the Kotel. It was raining even, like drizzling, whatever it is, and we like learned all about the Korban Pesach like at the Kotel on Erev Pesach. It actually was awesome. So I'm hoping to do it again. So if any of you are here, I would actually love to
join.
I don't know, whenever I'm like, oh, that's you. But yeah, but I think
that was nice as well.
Yeah, you're right. And last year was the first time.
Let's do it in the morning so I can get to it.
Oh, let's try. Honestly, I'll probably have to wait until after like beer or whatever
so
it is. But let's maybe try like around 11ish. I would actually
down.
Really, I can't. It really was like so meaningful. So I would actually love to do it again. So I let's be in touch. I would actually love it. So anyone who else is here, really, you're like very welcome to do it. But even if you're home, I really like recommend you could still read the.
I'll be fine. I'm not gonna be at home. Like I'm going away. So, like, I probably won't be doing that much, I don't know what I'll be doing.
Right. But by the way, but even other than not doing Malacha, like, we should be realizing this right now is a Chag. We should all be with all of Am Yisrael bringing our Korban Pesach. And I think whatever more that we can do to, like, bring that into our consciousness, like, the better. So, again, even if you can't go to the Kotel, to even just learn the Pesukim about the Korban Pesach at home and wherever it is that you happen to live, I think is, like, worthwhile to do. Was there a question over there? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Wait, I have a couple of questions. Wow. You know there's meant to be a fast date on the Earth Pesach?
Yeah. Because of
that. No, it's not us, though.
For the Bechorim.
Is this for boys?
It's just for
the oldest boy.
Yeah, sure.
Or if you're, wait.
No.
You have to be the oldest sibling.
It's actually interesting, which, by the way, might then help explain something that I always was, like, troubled by, which is it's a fast day, but nobody actually fasts.
They just make a seum.
And, like, why do we ever do that? And I'm guessing, I'm guessing it's because of that duality, where on the one hand, you have to, like, recognize that this was, like, Matka B'chor and whatever it is. On the other hand, it's Erev Chag, and really, a Chag itself. I guess that's why we, like, get out of it by doing that.
No, he never does. We always make a seum and then meet him.
Yeah, pretty much everybody does. I've heard of one or two people who, like, overseas.
What do you do with
CMO?
Don't you have to, like, learn something?
Yeah,
I'm
pretty
sure,
like, a parent of the child.
Yeah, I've definitely heard of one or two people who do, but, like, generally, the Minhag HaOlam is to do a CMO and not fast.
I think my brother fasts.
Is your brother? You're the
oldest.
Okay, what all of this raises, wait, so far, I hope we have been convincing, right, that in fact, yes, Yudal and Nisan, what we call Erev Pesach, actually is a Chag. It is a Chag surrounding and generated by the Karban Pesach. We have seen that from the fact that the Pesachim explicitly call it Elam Odei Hashem and then lists, right, Yudal and Nisan. We've seen it because there's an Isser Malacha. We've seen it because there's an Isser Chametz D'Oraita, right? We've seen it because the mourners, actually, that was source number 4, if you want to see it inside after, right, stop their practice first because, right, basically from Chatzot on already is a holiday. So you, like, already have to have done all your preparations, like getting a haircut and showering and whatever it is, like, earlier than that, really. Pointing it really is a holiday of its own. The million-dollar question, all we've done so far is develop the fact that Yudal and Nisan is a holiday of its own generated by the Korban Pesach. The million-dollar question is why, right? Like, why is the Korban Pesach so much more significant than the Olam, the Shlomim, and the Toden? Really, forget even the net. Every single holiday has a special Korban, right? How do we know that? Because of Tefillat Musaf, right? Tefillat Musaf. Every single holiday has its Tefillat Musaf. And in Musaf, we read the specific additional korban that holiday has. Those don't generate a holiday of its own. Like, what is it about the Korban Pesach that is so radically different than any other korban that was brought in all these other holidays? What is it about the Korban Pesach? So to understand that, we also have to, like, go back a little bit and understand, like, almost like the surrounding context and background of Yetziyah Mitzrayim, which is that I think I would have tended to think, perhaps, that Am Yisrael of that generation must have been, like, the greatest tzaddikim ever, right? Why? Because if you think about what that one generation saw, it's, like, insane, right? What did those self-same people see in the space of 2 months? Forget even that, like, what they saw for the first time.
Yetziyah Mitzrayim, all
yes,
those, all
if I ask you, what are, like, the biggest events in all of Jewish history, right? I think I probably would say, right, if I asked what are the two biggest events, I think I would probably say Yetziyah Mitzrayim, Matan Torah, right? I think are probably the two. Yeah, let's actually talk, right? And how much time is there?
Moshe was already, she's saying that they saw
the children being thrown into the Nile and then, like, going into,
but the children being thrown in the Nile was before Moshe was born, and by the time Moshe, like, went back to Mitzrayim and took them out.
Correct, it could have been
a lot older. Like, it was just, like, all the people probably saw that and remembered it, probably, like, in their 80s.
Maybe that's actually an interesting question. At what point did they stop that? I don't know if you know. It's an interesting question. Meaning, did they stop it
Even if once it stopped, like, the trauma of a parent seeing that, like, I could imagine that.
No, but Moshe was,
like,
really old. Like, he was much older when
he
came back.
Yeah, but it's not clear that it stopped then, meaning it might have been ongoing. I imagine it was ongoing.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's an interesting question. Like, did they stop that once? Because, again, the Midrash says that they did it because they saw the Savior was to be born.
Yeah.
Did they then know it's already too late, you missed that he's already been born? Or did they just continue up ongoing during all those, you know, 80 years?
We will never know.
It's an interesting question. But either way, point being, that generation, in the space of 2 months, not even their whole lifetime, experienced, I would probably say literally, the single two greatest events in all of Jewish history.
Yeah.
They saw, right? They saw saw all the plagues, and then they saw, right, what's it called, the splitting of the sea, and they march at, right, they march at Egypt, and they have the splitting of the sea, and then they see God himself, right, give the Torah. It's like, these amazing things, and therefore, I would have thought, and interestingly, by the way, they even were supposed to be the self-same generation that was going to then enter the land, right? But the point being, I would have thought,
that those are the same people that all of them had to be killed, like,
exactly, and that's actually exactly what brings us to my point, which is, I would say, I would think they must have been, like, the greatest generation that ever lived if they merited the self-same people to see the greatest single two greatest events in all Jewish history. Yet, we know that they're not. First of all, exactly as you're pointing out, they complain to the point where they even end up doing, right, Chet HaMeraglim, and actually they were supposed to have the third greatest event and enter into the land, but they don't. But the truth is, we know that even before, or like, I know I was always told the Midrash from, like, I don't know, elementary school, that what?
They were on, like, the 49th
exactly, level, right? That was always the Midrash, right, that I was taught. They were on the 49th level of Tum, and the reason that God had to rush them out and drop the Midrash and brush them so deep is had they stayed even one extra hour, they would hit the 50th level and reach, like, the point of no return and whatever it is. But you don't even have to resort to Midrashim. If you actually look at the Psukim from Sefer Yecheskel, look at source number 5, straight shot of Psukim, you don't even need a Midrash, says, right, God is saying, "Vamar telehem, right? Kol mar d'Hashem elokim, v'yom b'chari Yisrael. On the day I chose Israel, v'sayadi lizeret beit Yaakov, and I raised my hand to swear to the right children of Israel. V'udalehem b'res mitzrayim, and I made myself known to them in Egypt. V'sayadi lehem nemor ani Hashem elokim, and I said, I am Hashem your God. V'yom ohu nishar nasati adi lehem lotiem b'res mitzrayim, but I swore I'm going to take them out. I'm going to bring them to this wonderful land." Look at what it says in Zion. But Omar lehem, and I said to them, Ishikutei enav hashlichu, it's so depressing. As he's giving this, like, glorious thing, I'm making myself known to them, and I'm saying, I'm Hashem, your God, I'm going to bring you to this awesome land. And I had to tell him to get rid of their avodah zarah, right? He says, and don't, you know, defile yourselves with the avodah zarah of Egypt. I am Hashem, your God. But look at Chedek, it's even worse. Bad enough he had to tell them to get rid of their avodah zarah. Look at Chet. Vayam Rubi, they rebelled against me. Veloa Bubi Shmo Eli, and they refused to, right? They didn't want to listen to me. Ish Echikutei Neim Lo Hashlichu, right? They did not cast away the abomination of their eyes, their Avodah Zarah. Vekilu Lebetayim Lo Azavu, they did not abandon, right, all the Avodah Zarah of the Egyptians. God wanted to, like, pour his rage against them, right? They're doing a Avodah Zarah. It's crazy. And in fact, right, what do we know is the famous Midrash also about how many of them left, right? How many of them left Egypt? When we say only what, sorry?
One fifth,
they say, right? Because it says Hamushim.
Oh, yeah, because they had to leave behind all the, like, bad people.
Exactly, right? Take a look. That's the famous Rashi, right? In source number 6, Shmo, where it says, right? Basically, it says, V'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim, which in the pshat seems to mean that they went armed. But Rashi famously says, "Chamushim echad mechamisha yatzu v'arba'a chalikim meitzu b'shloshim efelah." 80% died.
That's so
80%.
Mean.
It's crazy. But here's what this all raises the question. On the one hand, you're saying it's mean, but why might that have been the case?
Because they weren't holy enough.
Exactly. Point being, what we see, and that is one of these
is that they did have to reach this certain.
Is that they, like, exactly, they were not necessarily these great tzaddikim, but they had to deserve it. It wasn't simply, well, if you were born to a Jewish mom, well, then it's automatic, you're part of the Israelite nation, and God is going to swoop down and save you and do all these miracles. Like, no, they had to actively do something to earn it and deserve it. And what did God himself, right, he basically said, right, this is again a Midrashim, where he said, he saw that they were empty of mitzvot, and therefore he said he realized he has to give them 2 mitzvot in order to basically give them the zechuyot to be saved. And he gives them 2 sort of like bloody mitzvot, right? What are the 2 mitzvot he gives?
Good,
dam mila and dam korban pesach, right? That's also where they say, b'damayichayit, through your blood you shall live, right? Through your blood you shall live, right? 2 blood-oriented mitzvot, dam mila, dam korban pesach, was what gave them the merit to be saved. Now, here comes the question, though. Of all the 613 mitzvot in the Torah, that God was going to choose 2 in order to give Bnei Yisrael the merit to be saved, why these 2? Now, Brit Milah, I understand, right? Why Brit Milah? Why does that make sense? This is how you actively enter yourself into the covenant of being part of Am Yisrael. Makes total sense that this is going to be the one. You want to be saved, says God? Join my nation, right? Do something to actively show you want to join. Totally get it. Right? But what about the second one? I would have said, I don't know, keep a Shabbos, right, to show that you want to be part of my nation. Why on earth Korban Pesach? Like, that's so, like, random, right? What though seems, therefore, to be the significance of the Korban Pesach? What then seems to be true about the Korban Pesach? Exactly. Korban Pesach is also a way by which we demonstrate that we want to be part of Am Yisrael. Now, how do we see that? First of all, it's so cool. There are 2 and only 2 mitzvot. Torah say in the entire Torah, which by simply being lazy and not doing them and just doing nothing, you get curry, right? There's other things you get curry for, but that's only if you actively do something the Torah said not to do. There are two and only two things that if you're just whatever, going about your life and just whatever, but you happen to like not do those things that by like a shave al but by not doing something you could get curry. What are the two?
Brit
Milah and Korban Pesach. They're the only two that if you don't get a Brit Milah and you or you don't bring Korban Pesach, you get curry. Now what does that again show about them? Just this is how you actively draw yourself to Am Yisrael. I mean, the fact that you get curry for not doing them, it's not because God is suddenly striking you with lightning. It's if you don't actively join yourself to Am Yisrael, the natural result is that you are cut off from Am Yisrael and you get curry. Right? It's so clear that that is the huge, huge significance of Brit Milah and of Korban Pesach. These are the two by which you join yourself to Am Yisrael. In fact, we just saw this. Was it in Masech Megillah or in Rosh Hashanah or whatever? We just saw this recently. I think it was in Rosh Hashanah, that there's actually a Havamina, even in the Gemara, yeah, it was in Rosh Hashanah, there's a Havamina in the Gemara, that every single convert to Am Yisrael should have to what?
Have Brit Milah.
And do they have to have Brit Milah? Yes, right? Meaning every male, right? Has to Brit Milah. What else do they have to do? Right, exactly. Really? Right, basically, the conversion process, you have to accept Olam Chutzlaim.
I'm bringing a Korban Pesach.
So here's what. So this is what we saw in Masechet Rosh Hashanah. We just saw that they're actually post Beit HaMikdash. Every convert had to set aside money for their Korban Pesach, so that when the Beit HaMikdash will be rebuilt, they have their money set aside for the Korban Pesach. And then it was one of the Tekanot, Rav and Yochanan and Zakkai, that who could keep track of that their whole lives until they were accidentally using it, and then they're using Hekdesh. Yeah. So they basically say like, stop doing that. But point being, there's a real Hamamina that like part of a conversion process. Should have to be. You have to accept Torah Mitzvot. You have to go to the mikvah. You have to do Brit Milah, sure you're joining Am Yisrael, and you have to bring a Korban Pesach. Because Korban Pesach is how you show that you're joining Am Yisrael. Essentially, what we're also seeing, what's so cool, I think, about Pesach, is that Pesach is essentially a holiday of national conversion. Right? This is a holiday when we all sort of convert to Judaism, and when everyone sort of, it's their chance to, like, actively say that we are part of Am Yisrael, we want to be part of it. The question, though, still is why, right? Brit Milah, we get it, right? That was the covenant, right, that God gives Abraham. That's how we, right, enter our children into Am Yisrael. Like, makes sense. But what about the Korban Pesach? Like, what is it? I mean, what we've seen is that the Korban Pesach is how you enter yourself to Am Yisrael. We've seen that both by the fact it was one of the two mitzvot given. We see because you get, it's one of the only two that you get kari. We see because there's this havamina that every convert should have to bring it. But why? Why on earth is bringing a Korban Pesach like a way to demonstrate that you're like joining Am Yisrael? What do you guys think? Yeah.
We're talking about the one that is a goat, like Yom Kippur?
So, whichever animal it is, it was, like, the god of the Egyptians. And so, basically, what you'd be doing is you'd be taking it in 2 days early, like, everyone would see
I've heard that. It's Sally who says that.
Excellent.
It's, like, very scary for them.
Yes. Like, any of Odezra.
Fantastic. I was about to say exactly that. Fantastic. Yes, it's a sheep, I'm pretty sure. What's it called? But basically, yes, and I think it's both. It both shows your total, like, repudiation of this thing as a Avodah Zarah, because if you harbored even a tiny modicum of doubt that maybe this thing really has divine power, you wouldn't dare to, like, slaughter it. And secondly, not only does it show that you do not harbor any, like, faith in this thing as a god at all, but it also shows that you do have faith in God. Why? Because even if you don't think that thing has divine power, all the Egyptians around you do. And so it both shows that you don't think it has power and that you do have faith that God will protect you from the wrath of the Egyptians who do think it has power, that this thing that you're about to slaughter. And therefore, bringing the Korban Pesach was an incredibly powerful statement of faith in God. And again, both repudiating faith in this thing as an Avodah Zarah and faith in God to protect us. And so it really does make sense that the Korban Pesach really has this incredible, incredible significance as this statement of I am actively joining myself to Am Yisrael. The final piece, though, and I'm happy that it sounds like Sally mentioned it also, is Interestingly, based on all of what we just said then, really the Korban Pesach should entail, right, taking this thing into your house and slaughtering it and showing you don't think it has faith and God will protect you and whatever it is. But what is the climax of the Korban Pesach? And in fact, the Pesukim really say that it was this piece that is what the Malachim Avet saw and therefore passed over the houses of Am Yisrael. It wasn't the slaughter or whatever it is. What was it? What was the... They had to take the blood and put it on their doorpost, which to you and I sounds like gruesome, right? They have to take this blood. It's like, why did they need that to be the final? Why do they have to do it at all? And not only do they have to do it, but... Hold on, the same day. Pesukim on the sheet. I might not have. But basically, the Pesukim explicitly say... Whatever. But basically, the Pesukim are very, very explicit in saying that it was seeing the blood on the doorpost was what led to Pasachti al Batechem, was seeing the blood. Why do we need that final step that seems so gross? So what I would say is, usually the truth is, blood is a very critical part of all karbanot. The central steps of the avoda always are the steps involving the blood. But where is the blood usually sprinkled? Usually on the mizbeach. What's the incredible significance of the fact that we have to put the blood on our doorpost?
It turns the doorpost.
It turns our house.
Exactly. Now you can appreciate the title, right? Is that what we're doing is we are transforming our homes into the Mizbeach, right, by putting the blood in our doorpost. And in fact, usually the korban is slaughtered, right, in the Beit HaMikdash, and then brought on, right, on the Mizbeach. All of what would normally be done on the Mizbeach, we're doing in our homes. But in particular, it is that act. Usually you do the sprinkling of the blood on the Mizbeach. We are doing that on our homes. That is what the Malachim Avet sees and therefore passed over our homes, right? It is so clear that what we're doing is transforming our homes into the Mizbeach. And as I think such a cool point about that is why do we have to transform our home into the Mizbeach? Why not transform our home into, I don't know, the Aron, right? I would think the Aron of everything. I don't know, maybe into the Menorah or whatever. Why dafka transform our home into the Mizbeach? Any idea? What's a very remarkable feature of the Mizbeach that is unique to the Mizbeach, not to the Aron or the Kodesh Kodesh or
the other things? Not necessarily everyone or anyone can take part in. All the kelim and the Beit HaMikdash and everything generally associated with them, and it's all kelim only. But when it comes to mizbeach, that's the one thing that you could have Kohen Yisrael and the any person.
But we all do korban.
Everybody brings a korban, exactly.
Good.
Even I'm thinking of korban shalom. That's one of the biggest examples because that's when we're God has a piece, the clan has a piece, and the Israel has a piece.
Mm-hmm.
So, I just...
We all kind of, share in a more direct way.
Mizbeach is the one thing that, everyone has the real ability to,
mm-hmm.
be taking a part in, and, specifically in Korban Pesach, we know we all do.
Good, everybody has to eat
right.
from
it's
it or whatever. Good. Very, very communal. Absolutely, yes, excellent. That is definitely a piece of it. And another piece, any of you doing Nach B'Kiyut, I don't know if you've done this part, but what's mm-hmm. also so cool about the Mizbeach is also a unique feature. It's true about the Mizbeach. Who runs it? Yoav Adoniyahu, right, if you know what I'm talking about, right? What's also true about the Mizbeach? It offers protection. Yes, right? Isn't that so cool? Meaning, if you take a look, I brought that here on the sheet. Here, if you look, it's on the back of it, where it says, hold on, I thought I had put it. If you look at source number 9 is where it specifically says, take a look at source number 9 for one second, just going back to the other point, is where it says that, right, you have to put the blood again on the doorpost. Right? The blood is the sign, not even the Korban Pesach, that was the blood. Ra'iti et hadam upasachti alechem. I will see the blood, I will pass over you. Right? That was what led to us, right, being passed over and being saved. And actually, if you even look at the Mechilton source number 10, is where, so again, it's not my idea. Look, the Mechilton explicitly says, right, based on the phrase of "Natnu al shtem v'zovi al mashkov," you have to put the blood on the doorpost. Nimtzeinu lemedim sheshloshan mizbechot hayu lavoteinu b'mitzrayim. There were 3 altars to our forefathers in Egypt. Hamashkov u'shtem v'zovi. Each part of the door, basically, we're turning it into an altar. And again, the question is why? So if you look at source number 11, is where it explicitly says, right, me'im mizbechi tikachenu lamut. You have to take somebody away from the mizbeach in order to kill him. The mizbeach offers protection. And that's why in sources 13 and 14 tell the stories of both Adoniyahu and of Yoav, who ran to the mizbeach and grabbed onto the karnot ha-mizbeach. Why did they do that? Because they know that when you are holding on to the karnot ha-mizbeach, you cannot be killed. what's so cool about that? What were we doing on Pesach night when we not only slaughtered that Chalav Pesach? We are basically turning our own to Mizbeach. So now why do we need to hold on to Mizbeach that night? Because the Malach HaMavet is raging around outside. And we need to transform our homes into this altar to make sure that we don't get like swept along with that. And what's also so cool, I actually only had heard this idea like within the last few years. How do we usually translate the word Pesach, right? God, right? Pesach al b'tei b'nei Yisrael and Pesach al Passover. We all call it Passover. That's the English name, right? Passover, right?
But it means leave in haste.
Ah, so could mean leave in haste. You guys said that. I remember when you said, I said, I'm even going to suggest another one. So there's also another, from Little Molly I saw that I've heard that others say. Yes, excellent. That it actually means to hover. Like what famous pasuk that maybe you guys also saw in Akbikud also uses that word? On my Hayatem? Right, until when are you going to continue? Now, normally, I had always heard it translated as, again, the passing over idea about jumping back and forth. How long are you going to continue jumping back and forth between God and Baal, right? However, at least I heard this from Raphael Amali in a recorded shiur. He suggests it doesn't necessarily mean like jumping back and forth or passing over. It can actually mean hovering. How long are you going to continue sort of hovering uncertainly, like not sure which one are you going to go with? You're going to go with God, you're going to go with Bob. But it's not that you're jumping back and forth. You're like hovering uncertainly the way that like a mother bird like hovers over her right babies like to protect them. But point being, he says that he suggests is really what the word Pesach means. Now, if that's what it means, for me, it like transformed my entire like understanding of what we mean when we call this holiday Pesach. Why? What's the image when we call it Pesach? To me, it was always this almost like terrifying image of like this Malach HaMavet who's like raging outside with no control and no whatever it is. And what are we doing? We're like huddling in our houses, trying to like be invisible of like, just don't notice me, right? And like pass over me, right? However, if we translate it as hovering, it is a totally different image. Yes, there is a Malach HaMavet raging around out there killing all the firstborns, but it's not that we're trying to like huddle into like obscurity and like pretend we don't exist and like don't see me and don't notice me and pass over me. What instead is going on then with that word of Pesach? God is hovering in front of our houses, protecting us. It's not that we want to be invisible and just pass over me and don't notice me. No, it's the opposite. It's this incredible, beautiful image of God hovering protectively over our homes. And that when he sees that blood, it's not that that makes him like pass over and ignore us. Seeing the blood is what makes him, like, Dafid, notice us and hover protectively over our homes. And, like, yes, notice us and protect us. And what's so cool about that, I'll take it 1 second, is that it also fits with the fact that what do we always refer to as Pesach night? We call it Leil Shimurim, a night of guarding. Right now, some say it means that God was, like, watching over this night and, like, counting down to when he could, like, save us and whatever it is. But one explanation of Leil Shimurim is it is a night of guarding. It's the night when God is protecting us, which would totally fit with this translation of Pesach as God is hovering over and protecting our homes. And it fits with the fact that what do we not say, Leil HaSeder? We don't say the full Shema, right? Because of the fact that we don't need to ask for protection overnight because God is already there, standing there and watching us and protecting us. Which is this beautiful image, and is sort of the result of us having transformed our homes into the Mizbeach with its like offerings of protection. The final piece, though, that this brings us to is, what does this mean, though, for us? Because now we've sort of, like, I hope, developed these, like, incredible ideas about the huge significance of the Korban Pesach, and that was how Am Yisrael, like, joined themselves to Am Yisrael and merited being saved and merited God's protection and all of that. But, like, so what does that mean then for you and me? We're like, yes, hopefully, again, we maybe will be able to go to the Kotel and learn about the Korban Pesach or even learn about the Korban Pesach and wherever you are.
Don't we say, like, exactly the Korban Pesach and, like, Easter?
Yes. Although, again, we have the Zeroa, right, on the Seder plate to remember the Korban Pesach, though we have to be careful because it's not the actual Korban Pesach, so it's just kind of like Zecher. But, yes, so part of it I do think is let's be conscious of the Korban Pesach and let's learn about it and whatever it is. Excellent. But I would also suggest that maybe that's what we're doing by getting rid of our chametz. Why? Exactly. They had the Korban Pesach as their way to transform their homes into the Mizbeach and therefore merit God's protection and merit being taken out. We don't have a Karban Pesach, but perhaps our way of you and I transforming our homes, even in 2019, even in a post-based HaMikdash world, maybe our way of transforming our homes into the Mizbeach is by ridding our homes of chametz. Now again, why does it do that? Because what was the one place all year long that can never, ever, ever have chametz? Is the Mizbeach. And therefore, by us ridding our homes of chametz, and again, as we said in the beginning, it almost doesn't make sense. We don't have to buy anything else almost. This idea of saying, not only do we not just like, again, just add matzah to the menu. Why can't we eat chametz? And not only that, we can't even own it. Why can we not own it? Why do we have to eradicate it and not even have it in our homes? Because I think that is our way of transforming our homes into the Mizbeach. And I think part of why that is so significant and like to really sort of tie it all together is that this is also one of the only holidays where we see that the Erev itself is also a holiday. And I think that perhaps some of the reason and some of the message is that Pesach, more than any other holiday, demands like advanced preparation, right? Like you can't just go into Pesach like without whatever it is because you first got to like eradicate all this chametz and you really got to get ready for it. And I think that that might not just be by chance, so to speak, or I think it's not just like happens to be corollary of the fact that God did create this Isser Chametz. I think it is exactly how it has to be that Pesach like demands preparation in advance. Why? Because really, again, please God, when the Beit HaMikdash is rebuilt, we'll really appreciate this. But the fact that there really are two holidays, Yudal the Nisan is its own holiday, generated by the Korban Pesach, and then is Chag HaMatzot. What's the idea behind that? I think the idea behind that is that Yud Daled Nisan is the part that we have to do. Again, what's the holiday of Yud Daled Nisan? That is the holiday of the Korban Pesach, which is all on us. We have to, right, take that sheep and guard it and then bring it to the Beit HaMikdash and slaughter it and, you know, whatever it is. That is what we have to do. And again, that is our active, you know, statement of, I am actively joining myself to Am Yisrael. I am repudiating Avodah Zarah. I am showing that I have faith in God to protect me. We have to do that piece, and it is only if we do our part of the Yudalim Nisan holiday, of the preparation and actively joining ourselves to Am Yisrael, it is only then that we then merit the week-long holiday of Chag HaMatzot, which is when God swoops down and saves us. As we saw, only 20%, one-fifth, merited to go out, right? Because of, again, the merits of the Brit Milah and the Korban Pesach and the part of Am Yisrael saying we're actively joining. Being simply born to a Jewish mother was not enough. We had to do something first. And I think that's what's sort of this whole, like, powerful idea behind Yudalid is the holiday of the Korban Pesach, followed by the week-long Chag HaMatzot. So again, please God, I hope we will have a Beit HaMikdash and a Korban Pesach again. But in the absence of that, definitely I think we should, again, at least learn about the Korban Pesach and appreciate it. So it's good that you and Deborah have done
it. It actually makes sense, because you can't even eat matzah on on...
Exactly, right? You just, like, starve here
at Pesach. Technically on Pesach, you can't eat matzah.
Exactly. Point being, it is a holiday unto itself, and that is when we have to do our part. And so point being, during these next 2 weeks, when in some ways, yes, it is annoying and frustrating to have to, like, clean out all of our pockets and all of our drawers and all of our whatever, but I actually think it is hugely significant, and that is when we are doing our part to merit, so that when Tet Vav Nisan comes, we're ready, and we have been part of the, hopefully more than one-fifth, who have actively joined themselves to Am Yisrael and, like, earned being taken out of Egypt that night, right. And being part of Am Yisrael.
This is really
yeah.
good.
Thank you.
Okay, firstly, that was incredible.
I know.
Yeah, that was so good. Wow. Secondly, I could just, like, be making this up, and this could be, like, my mind at 4 a.m., whatever the time is, but in your Karamazon, don't we have a thing that you have to mention Barilah and Yitzchak?
Yes, in fact, that's one of the reasons why I got suggested that maybe women are not Hayat Doraita, because we don't have Brit Milah, whatever.
Is there, like, why do we mention these two things?
We're just Hayat
Yitzchak, which, like, join us to Am Yisrael.
Why are you going to wait this entire time?
Interesting, meaning, like, why specifically in venturing do we have to mention those? And they're DACA critical. Again, so critical, in fact, that is why if Eve not suggest them, maybe somebody who then isn't part of, like, Brit Milah wouldn't even have to see that. Like, it's a critical part of venturing. That is actually interesting. Why would it connect to venturing?
Venturing has a lot of stuff that don't really connect to it, but...
No, it's a great question about, like, what is the... specific thing. I'm trying to make sense that we focus on the land, because the land is how we do both stuff, though, whatever it is. I don't know, again, just al regla achat, we could suggest that it is recognizing, again, that we are thanking and blessing God for food because we are part of this covenantal